Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Love, Light, and Passion, where award-winning social media professional Wendy Manganiello and her guests talk about turning your ideas and dreams into reality. Wendy believes that every woman can have it all, and she takes away all of the stress that comes with the social media aspect of business by providing a number of resources, including Facebook ad creation and implementation, management, coaching and training, strategy, and so much more. This show is dedicated to the loving memory of Sean Stevenson, whose instinctive ability to motivate others taught Wendy how to take a dream and allow the universe to make it into an abundant reality. Contact Wendy to do the 7 Days to Social Media Sanity Facebook Challenge and have her help you to make your goals and actions match your business plan. Don't end this year not socially ready for next year. And now, your host, Wendy Manganiello.
Good morning, everyone. I'm so excited to be on another episode of Love, Light, and Passion. We have a special guest with us today. You know, the holidays are coming, the end of the year is coming, and so we want to make sure, especially all our entrepreneurs, that we are financially fit and set up, and maybe some of the things that we looked at this year, we weren't as ready as we thought. So, as we prep, we're going to hear more from, on the show, people who are passionate about finances and financial investing, because it's so important for the entrepreneur to be able to go out in the world and feel comfortable that their future is secure and still live their passion. So we're bringing on lots of guests who are passionate about finances. So today we have Kevin Duffy, who's going to be with us, and I'm going to read, he is a financial advisor, so I'm going to read his bio because it is quite impressive. Kevin has been working in the industry for more than 13 years and works for Raymond James & Associates. He has lived and worked in the area for most of his life, which is here in Louisville. He serves business owners, professionals, retirees, pre-retirees. He has a unique step-by-step process that allows him to determine which services and solutions will help his clients meet all their financial goals. Kevin is a vice president of investments and financial advisor with Raymond James Associates in Louisville. Kevin was born and raised in southern Indiana, where he currently lives on a 23-acre farm with his wife, Lisa, for over 32 years. Kevin is retired lieutenant commander of the United States Navy, where he served his country for nearly 20 years. Kevin earned 3 college degrees, including an MS in computer science from the Naval Postgraduate School. In his downtime, Kevin enjoys spending time with his family. He also enjoys reading, writing, and great outdoors. Kevin is certified financial planner practitioner and has acquired the investment management consultant and CRPC designations. These designations are testament to his integrity and commitment to his clients. Kevin views every client relationship as unique and develops individual solutions to address individual goals. In today's challenging market, Kevin uses his knowledge to help his retirees and pre-retirees like you plan for a lifetime of income while minimizing the devastating effects of market risk. So I'm really excited to have Kevin on. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Just fine. How are you doing today, Wendy?
I am great. I'm so glad that you're on because I think it's so important because, you know, this show is all about passion and people who are passionate about stuff. And so we had entrepreneurs who listen and their passion is coaching or, like me, social media. So our passion is something that does not have to do with finances, because when you're an entrepreneur, or business person, small business, medium-sized business, that's not where our focus is. We want to focus on what we're passionate about. So I think it's so important to have somebody like you on the show who's passionate about money to help set us straight, to help us guide us. So I want to just get into a little bit of your history of, you know, because you had the quite, and I'm always impressed that you, and happy almost Veterans Day, but how you go from being in the Navy, a career long, you know, that's considered a long career in the Navy, to a financial advisor. What brought you from one thing to another, and how did you find that passion?
Well, I retired from the Navy in 1998, and I had been a representative of something called the Navy Mutual Aid Society, which helped teach people in the active duty Navy, both officers and enlisted, about investing and saving for their future. And so it's sort of a passion of mine for the whole 20 years in the Navy. So when I looked to retire, I was looking at going into the financial services industry, and I compared that to my opportunities as with a computer science master's degree, and the pay differential was quite great. So I went with computer science, and I did consulting for about 5 years after that. And then when the 2001 collapse happened, it hit particularly hard the high-tech industry. So I was laid off twice in 2001, and my second time laid off is about 4 months. And I thought, well, you know what, I might as well go check out this financial advisor route because I'm not making any money right now. And I started at Merrill Lynch, and 14 years later, here I am. So, and I really, really do enjoy it a lot more than computer consulting. So this is great.
And, you know, that's an interesting thing because there's a lot of people out there who have started with one thing. I was in nonprofits for years and switched to social media, found my true love. So I think that's amazing because you almost have to go through certain things in life to say, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be now, you know, and try out those things. And what also interests me is that when you have somebody who has that background of saying, okay, I tried this, it didn't work, you know, there's all people who yes, go forward in what you want to do. But on the other side of understanding what it can be like in troubling times of finances, if you're not working, if you don't feel secure, and for you to be able to say, like, I have that little bit of that experience, so I know what it means to get yourself financially secure. You know, somebody who, especially for entrepreneurial women and men, because sometimes you just don't know for that paycheck is going, so it's coming from. So it's really important to be secure. So we are going to talk about a variety of things today, and we've decided to gear the show specifically for the entrepreneurs because there's a lot of stuff out there, and a lot of times we don't know whether to go or stay or what to do. But what we're going to talk about first is the stock markets, because as an entrepreneur, you work kind of hard. You know, lots of people work hard for their money, but, you know, again, don't know whether or not if that's a safe place because, you know, you just don't know. And so we'd like your feedback on whether or not it's a safe place, you know, for somebody to put their money in right now. What's your take on that?
Okay, yeah, I mean, that's the sort of questions I get almost every day, and first off, let me say that the news media has a tendency to go for the sensational. And so, as they say, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. The same thing goes for the stock market. So most of the time on the television and the other news outlets, you see a lot of these doom and gloom people coming out saying, oh, the market's terrible, we're going to the biggest crash in history. And you have people marketing that type of information, and it's an ongoing thing. And so that's where most people get their information about. So it does seem very scary. And if you don't do it right, it can lead to financial disaster. But what I always tell people also is that if we look through the history of the stock market, every time we've had a market correction, 100% of the time, it has always led to a new all-time high. And right now we're in a period where the market just went down about 3,000 points, and now we're within about 500 points of where the last all-time high. So we're mostly through the recovery from this correction, but a lot of people still think, well, it's still terrible, the market's horrible and all that. And if you think back to 2008, that was a very, very serious market, the bear market and basically a recession. We call it the Great Recession, and that was a global event, and it was almost as severe as the Great Depression. And in both those two incidents, the stock market has recovered and gone on to all-time new highs. Since 2008, I don't know how many times we've had all-time new highs, but probably a dozen or more. I mean, it just keeps going up and up and up. And I have these mountain charts showing the history of the stock market, go all the way back to the 1920s, and it shows that this, you know, overall it's an upward trend, but you have all these corrections up and down. And it's those corrections that we need to have market performance, but it's also those corrections that cause the fear in people to get out the market at the absolute worst time. And the worst times are generally when we have a market correction near a bottom and people say, well, I've got to get out of the market because this time it's worse or it's different. And they usually get out low, and then once the market gets up higher, then they get back in. So they just sold low and bought high. Now, it is simple, but it's complicated at the same time. So you also on these news channels like that we watch, we'll see them. They'll be recommending stocks to buy and not to buy and all that, and that's really not where most investors should be concentrating on, because buying individual stocks is a very dangerous proposition. You can have concentrations in individual stocks. You can go back in history and see things like Enron. At the one point, Enron was probably the fastest-growing company in the world, and there are people who worked there thought everything was great. And overnight, they found their accounting irregularities, and it just crashed. And a lot of those people working for those companies also had their 401ks in there as well, so they lost everything. So a better way of going about this is to hire a professional and to get a professional to help you with this, because in my practice, what I do is I go out and hire money managers for my clients, so I don't call up and say, all right, there's this hot stock, let's buy this and sell that. It's too complicated for one person to really control, even, because you need a vast variety of different asset classes, and you need maybe hundreds of thousands of different stocks within your portfolio to be safe. But having said that, generally speaking, it's best never to really get out of the market unless things are more severe than, say, 2008, which I don't expect will happen anytime in our lifetime. But we can never say never, but it's a complex thing, but it's simple as that. You need to, you know, go with professional advice. You need to stay in the market. You need to not worry about the day-to-day up and down gyrations, because the down gyrations are as important as the up, because we have to have corrections in order to get the market to go up. And to give you an example of something, that an analogy, I just recently had this emerald ash borer is coming through the country. It's destroying ash trees, and I have a piece of property with lots of 100 acres and has lots of ash trees on it. And so I hired a professional forester, and I know quite a bit about tree management and forest management, but I'm not a professional, so I hired a forester for that, and he's going to go through and mark the trees. He's going to put out for bid to all the professional cutters so we get the best possible outcome. So it's similar to that. I hired a professional to do that, because I don't do that on a day-to-day basis, but I could have gone out directly to the cutters and negotiated my own deal, but it probably wouldn't have turned out as well.
Yeah, and I think that you're correct in that, because my experience with entrepreneurs or people who own their own business, especially single ones who are starting to get success and then they falter, is because they try to do it all themselves. It's one of the most common problems that we have. And as a result, we don't do as well as we can if we would have brought somebody, especially in the finance department, in to say this is really the way to go. So here's the question, and you said something interesting about that we panic when we hear the up and the down and the, so for somebody to to be able to kind of live through going into the stock market, should they put like shielders on? Should they just ignore you go to CNN Money and all of this stuff, and we even saw it in when Greece crashed, that they start to they panic and do all of this stuff. So is it better for people to kind of like, you know how they just say in general, you shouldn't watch the news, you'll be happier. But well, it doesn't go the same way. Should you check in once in a while, or should you just say, you know what, if I don't know and I just leave it in somebody's hands, is this a better outcome? Like, where's that middle of the road thing where you want to be smart and savvy, but you don't want to be tied down to that TV and watching the numbers every day?
Well, yeah, I think that watching the news too much is not a good thing, but, you know, it doesn't hurt to check in every once in a while and see what they're saying, and then bounce that off of your financial advisor, and he can put it in perspective, he or she can put it in perspective for you, because, there is news happening all the time. And the main thing is that the relationship you have with your financial advisor should be such that he understands, he or she understands what your risk tolerance is, what your goals are, what's going on in your financial and personal life, so that as things occur, it might be time to make some changes within the portfolio. But I think if you watch the news every day, it's going to drive you out of your mind, because every day there's going to be at least one or two guys on there saying that the stock market's going to crash right now, or this is happening in Asia or Greece or wherever, and the emotional roller coaster you're going is not necessary. Again, if you look at the long-term history, the stock market goes up over time. So and if you really worry about the news too much, then I would recommend just not to watch it, as long as you have a professional in your life helping you with those decisions.
And just really briefly, just between us and the callers, how much does, just out of your, and you may not know the answer to this, you know, because we look at other countries and we hear about that all too, but how much does, like, when we go through an election or stuff like that, does that, in your experience, affect anything? Like, when we hear the ups and downs of who's president and who's not, is that another fear tactic? You know, if this person becomes president or if this person, you know, leave parties out of it. But what's your experience with that? Do you see that people get tied into that?
Yeah, there's a couple things. There is a study. It's called the Presidential Cycle Study, basically, which shows that in the presidential cycle, which consists of 4 years, that says that the first couple years, the return averages, we're in the third year of the presidential cycle, but the first couple years averages about, say, 3 to 5%, and the third year has averaged about 11%, and the fourth year, which is next year, averages about 7%. Now, all this sort of cycle information like that is just the averages, and so so what we could really say would be better, the probability out of the 4 years that the third year is going to be higher than the other 3 years, and the fourth year will be higher than the first 2 years, but it's not anything for certain. It's not 100%. Nothing in the stock market is 100%. So those are just probabilities. As far as whether the Democrats or the Republicans have become president, there has been studies done on that, and there's really no direct correlation to whether that the Democrats become president or the Republicans do over the next 4 years after that. But, you know, there's a lot of news about that. You know, there's always some of the parties are promoted as being better for the stock market and some less so, but the studies prove differently. There's really nothing you can predict with that.
Okay. That's just good to know, because you hear that and you're like, well, that's interesting. Maybe it does. I'm sure other people are curious about that too. So the other thing that you said, which is very key to, and I think it has to do with what you call market timing, is that people do panic. They pull because they're afraid they're losing money. And then they go back and buy high. And I don't think I've ever actually heard somebody say it like that, where I'm like, well, that just cost you a whole bunch of more money than if you would have stuck it out and just been on the build up to go high again. So, you know, and I'm sure again, it goes to the individual and the plan and what they're trying to do with their life. But it sounds to me, as a novice person, that would be potentially very expensive to end up doing that.
There's been a lot of research done on what we call behavioral finance, and it has to do with this brain science, basically. And they've done studies showing how that all human beings react to fear and to greed, and it's almost like it's compared to like a cocaine addiction. It has the same type of effects on the brain. If you buy a lottery ticket and you make a real big return, which is highly unlikely, but it does happen, of course, it has the same effect as getting, you know, high on cocaine to your brain temporarily. And the same thing happens on when you lose a lot of money. The effect in your brain is similar to, you know, if you're addicted to cocaine, what your brain effects can be on that. But it's a very natural thing for all human beings. If you have money in the stock market, any investment, when the money, when it goes down in value, that you feel really bad about, and you want to panic and you're fearful. And it's very natural when it goes up, you feel like, oh, this is fantastic. I want to go mortgage my house, get a second mortgage of my house, and buy more in the stock market at this high point. And so our natural tendencies are opposite of what we should be doing. But in general, we just don't want to time the market, because there's no really great way of timing the market. You know, a lot of people say they can. If it were true, we would all be investing our money. If there's an analyst out there that could really time the market perfectly, we would all be using him and using no one else. But it's not true. You can't time the market, but what we know is true is over time, the market does go up over time. It always has, and probably in the rest of our lifetimes, it always will. But there will be ups and downs, and that's almost as certain as the market going up as there will be corrections. And in general, you should expect to see a retraction or a correction of about 2-15% corrections a year. This one we had this year was about 12 or 13, and it was the first one in 4 years. And then about every 5 to 6 years, you should expect to see a correction about 30%. And it doesn't matter, you know, it's not going to be every year like we've been experiencing, but that's just what the averages have been. But the main thing is not to panic. If you're well diversified and you have good asset allocation and professional people managing your money, there's really nothing to be afraid of. And the best thing to do is to stay in, because if you get out, you're going to lose money.
You know, it's so funny because you're talking, and I couldn't help for a second. So, you know, I'm from New Jersey, the Atlantic City area, and I'm thinking that, you know, in order to live in Atlantic City, you can't go into this casino. There's got to be no call for you to be able to do that to keep your head straight, because you can go in and I'm thinking, I'm like, it must be the same thing for financial advisors, because you have to kind of keep your head straight and know what you're doing and not go into the emotional of it, so that you can, in the long term, help your clients. Because, and that's, you know, to really truly understand that it all kind of evened out and goes, and not get pulled into that what you say, that high of, oh my gosh, I'm making money now, so let me go and try to change everything to do it more. So I commend the people who are in the financial area that can do that, that can stay and say, okay, let's bring out the emotion. Because, and that's the other thing is that I think that with anybody, their money becomes an emotional tie. There's no about it. And so you have to have a trusted financial advisor to kind of steer you in the right direction and not the emotional direction.
That's right. And another thing that you'll see a lot on the television and media is, you know, they're always focusing on fees, you know, being the most important thing. And you know, I talk to clients all the time, and they'll say, you know, what's the fee? And I said, well, are you shopping for the lowest fee? Are you shopping for the best financial result for yourself and your families? Because if you're shopping for the lowest fees, you know, a financial advisor isn't probably the place to go. But if you're shopping for the best financial outcome, then you probably need to see a financial advisor. The same thing went with my was going on with my tree harvest. Yeah, I could have done it without paying the 10% fee that he charges, but to me, what he's doing for 10%, there's no way I could compensate that for that by just going out and trying to find the cheapest person to cut my trees and pay me that. So it's a big consideration.
And so we're going to switch gears just a little bit here. So, because I want to know what this means to you. So what does asset allocation and correlation mean, and why are they important? Because I think you have, like, if you're, and you may have to, like, just for those who are not in the financial sectors, make that simple for us to understand. And because, you know, a little, and granted, a little knowledge can be dangerous, but I think it's good for us to at least be able to go back to our own people and say what's going on in these areas, if that's important.
Okay, well, asset allocation, in the simplest terms, is basically, there are several ways to look at it, but the most basic way of looking at it is what portion of the portfolio is in stocks or equities, and what portion is in fixed income, and what is in cash. So that's three very broad asset allocation. And then the next level would be what we call the style box, where you have, it's basically nine different styles, where you have large cap growth, mid cap growth, you have large cap growth, mid cap growth, and small growth, and then you have value, large cap value, mid cap value, and small cap value. So, and then we can get into more exotic things like, you know, the overseas, international, and then you get what's called alternatives. And so the reason we want to understand asset allocation is that basically, in general, what happens when it used, in particular more in the past than today, we would have when fixed income went up or when bonds went up, stocks would go down and vice versa. Now, they've become more correlated in the recent years, which means that correlation means that if stocks were 100% correlated to bonds, then if the stocks went down 10%, bonds would go down 10%. So it used to be that the correlation was a lot lower, so that tended to be almost the opposite would happen, but now it's getting a tighter correlation. So we've introduced other asset classes like international, and then within international we can go to the capitalization and the value versus growth, and then we can go into things that are called alternatives. And alternative investments are those investments that aren't strongly correlated at all to the stock market, like this example I gave, my tree harvest. The price of what I get my trees when I get them harvested has very little, if nothing, to do with the stock market. So we'd say those two asset classes are highly uncorrelated, or even have a zero correlation. If something has a negative correlation, it will do the opposite. So if it's 100% negatively correlated, it's the exact opposite. So you wouldn't want to have a portfolio that had 100% negative correlation, because then you end up with a net of zero. But correlation is important over long term to reduce your risk and increase your return. So it's very important you have a lower correlated portfolio, but a high diversification among asset classes. Does that make sense?
It does. And so, and let me ask you, because, and this is, again, my noviceness. So when you're looking at all of this stuff, your correlation and your asset allocation, is there more of a conservative approach versus an aggressive approach? And in general terms, what does that mean for an individual? Like, who does, because, you know, when you're looking at allocating, because to me, you'll see my layman. Like, I look at government bonds and I'm like, I will be 103 before, you know, but that's my not, you know, whereas in a, so what is the difference between the two? And why would somebody maybe choose conservative over aggressive? Like, or does it even work like that? Does people make that choice?
Yeah, well, again, in the, when what's called modern portfolio theory came out in the 50s, it was much simpler in the three asset classes, the bonds, the stocks, and the cash. Generally speaking, at that point, the more bonds you had, the less risk you were taking, but the less return you were getting. And recently, I'd say that the optimum mix between bonds and stocks has now gone to about, if you want the most conservative, it'd be like a 70 to 80% bonds to 20 to 30% stocks. And but then when you throw in alternative investments and other vehicles, then it changes a bit. But in general, you know, if you just think about the stocks versus bonds, that's how risk is most normally measured. But remember, when you reduce risk, you reduce returns. So if you want to get, you know, say high single-digit returns, you know, 7-8% or something, you'd more likely look at more stocks than bonds. And bonds right now, it's challenging to get, you know, 3-4% at best. Mm-hmm. And the other thing we got to keep in consideration is that really, if you don't beat inflation, then the purchasing power of your dollars actually goes down in value. So, like, I remember when I bought my first car in the early 70s, I paid $3,200 for a brand-new Mazda. Now, you can't go out today and buy any car brand-new for $3,200. So if you have an investment, like in fixed income or bonds, that's only paying you 2%, and if inflation's 2%, then basically you're not really gaining anything. You have to be able to beat inflation and then some to make your purchasing power grow, because purchasing power is really the long-term most important thing. So when we plan, when I do financial plans for individuals, we talk about, ask them how much they want to spend in today's dollars. I say, so if they say, well, we need $3,000 a month to survive today's dollars if we were to retire right now, then I can project, I have some software, I can project that forward, say 20, 30 years from now. And so they might say, need $3,000 now, but in 30 years, that figure might be $6,000 that you have to have. Mm-hmm. And so we do projections based on inflation and based on market returns and based on asset allocation. So it all comes into play, but the risk is something that we need to have a long discussion about, because risk means different things to different people. So we need to get a fine-tuning on what you think about risk and returns and understanding of what that means in your portfolio.
That's really interesting, because, you know, you don't think about that. You look and you go, oh, well, maybe it'll be that much money, but you don't realize really, because of inflation, what that actually means. Because and so that even makes me go back in time. Not, I mean, we're used to gas prices as they are now, and it was so funny. I got gas at $1.94 the other day, and I thought I was in heaven because I actually got it at the discount. But when you think about inflation, if we go back 10 years or whatever, I don't know at that time, because again, you don't know what's going on, and you don't think of the inflation of gas, or that, you know, that changes all of the dynamics of what we would pay in the future, because a dollar, $2.94 seems extremely cheap for gas for me, but, you know, and we've had it close to $3 or so. I can see where that would make sense, you know, as you go forward, because maybe gas will be $5 a gallon by that point. And making that makes a lot of sense. Okay. So when the other thing is that, how do risk, reward, and probability determine long-term returns then? So is this from your system that you use? Is that you look and you go, okay, this is, and then we'll go back into the entrepreneur side of it. If you're in a business or, you know, started a business, what that may look like for you, somebody who's just starting versus somebody who's in a business long-term, vice versa. So is that how you do the risk, reward, and probability? Is it through this system? And what does that look like?
Well, within the financial planning software, there's something called Monte Carlo simulations, which basically says, based on our past history in the stock market, stock and bond markets, we know what type of returns can occur, and then we put in the system, and so we will project out maybe 1,000 or 2,000 lifetimes, possible lifetimes, and we can assign a probability to how likely it is that they will not run out of money, you know, by age 85 or 90, at the amount of money they have to invest and at the projections based on it. So we look at the probability. We don't know for sure what's going to happen in the stock or bond markets, but we can look at all the past history, and we can run different life scenarios and give a probability of success or failure. And so that's what we like to do. We like to get a probability of success of over, say, 80%, that you will not run out of money before you die, because that's the most important thing, because you don't want to have to try to go back to work when you're 78 or 85 years old because you ran out of money.
Well, here, that brings up another interesting question then. So on average, because we're living longer, what ages are you looking at for probability? Because I'm sure that makes a big difference now too, because we continue to live longer. Before it was early 70s, I would assume, and then we're going later and later. So how does that work for you too? How do you determine that?
Well, we as far as the generic rule, we look at, say, age 85, but we also, you know, we can talk about the longevity in your family. So, for instance, my parents are in their 80s now, and they look pretty healthy, and so I would say there's a strong probability that I might live to my 90s or beyond, and we'll wait and see. If my parents get to be 100, then I might be changing it. Other people, they say, no one's in my family's lived past 65, and so their life expectancy might be less, but what we like to do is err on the side of that you might live a lot longer than you think. So we like to use sort of like 85 as the baseline. And generally, if we get to that, then we're in pretty good shape. And generally speaking, if we can get to 85 and we look at the projections that the portfolio, you know, in the later years of that, if you've been in a plan for 30 or 40 years, actually gets pretty strong by that point, because we've gone through several market corrections. As long as you stay in the market, then you're going to get the uptrends in the market. And, you know, if you would ask someone, say, when the Dow was at $3,000, that we'd be in 2015 at $18,000 on the Dow, they'd think you're crazy. And so within 10 years, you know, we could probably be in the 30s or $35,000 on the Dow. And that might seem absurd, but that's only like a 7% average return, which is not out of the ordinary. The other thing, too, about particularly for entrepreneurs, you know, pretty much put their entire life and a lot of their savings in their entrepreneurial adventures.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here's another case of diversification. So if that doesn't succeed, you want to have a, sort of a plan B or another pot of money that's working for you, and that's where investing for the long term comes in hand, too. So, I mean, hopefully both will succeed, but it'd be better, you know, if your entrepreneurial efforts don't succeed, at least your retirement, you know, your retirement savings are working for you in the stock market.
And, you know, and this is the other thing, too, and so, which always fascinates me, because, you know, you hear it's never too late to invest, but in reality, or from your experience, you know, is it harder for the 40-year-old who just starts, like, when do you start investing? I mean, I know early on, but really, when do you start, especially as an entrepreneur, and, you know, maybe you done your business 4 or 5 years and you make a decent living, but you're always like, oh, what about that rainy day? You know, like, and how do you help change that mindset to say, okay, you know, because I know rainy days and entrepreneurs can really be a very tight thing and they're afraid to let go of their money because of that. So how do you work with those types of people who may be doing well for, you know, whatever, and they just, you know, is 40 too late? Is 50 too late? Like, what's too late, or what, or is there a too late? What is that?
Well, in general, of course, the earlier you start investing, the better. I mean, it's just the seventh wonder of the world is compound interest, and so the earlier you start, the better. The more you put in early, the better. But it's never too late, because it just isn't. And like you said before, we're living longer, so if you start at 40 and that's the only time you get started, well, get started and put as much away as you can. And also, one of the things particular entrepreneurs need to be aware of is that, you know, we can set up all kinds of retirement plans, simple SEPs, 401ks and such, and some of those have some limitations on it that you can't tap into those without having a penalty or to pay taxes and such. So if you're at the stage where your business is going pretty good and you have some extra money but you don't want to tap your money for long term, then you can open an account, a retail account, where you can get to your money without any penalties or fees. And in most cases, if you're working on what's called a wrap or a wrap type account, you can have without commissions, but you have free access to your money. So, you know, if I were an entrepreneur and my business is doing pretty good, but I had some money inside, so I might need that for investments. I have lots of entrepreneurs that do this. So we open up a retail account where they have the money working in the market, but they need access to it, and call me up, and within 3 days I can send them a check. So that's something to consider as well.
Well, then here's another question then for you, Kevin, because, you know, entrepreneurs, and I think in general, especially because of the fear factor, what is a true emergency to take investments out for? Because, you know, like, there are certain people who will go, like, this is an emergency. And do you help people navigate through the want and the actual emergency of a reason to take their money out? And we're not talking about because they're not crashing, but, you know, because especially when you're like, oh, I don't have as much money as I want because this month because I was a little low in sales or whatever. So what conduits a true emergency where you're like, yeah, this might make sense, or wait, because things change so much, especially in personal lives and entrepreneurship. So do you help clients with that decision making?
Yeah, yes, I do, and that's the main part of my job, and in fact, that's probably the major part of my job is on these emotional decisions like that, because, you know, we need to look at that, and I can give them a more objective look at things. They say, well, this is, I really need to buy this dress, and that's an emergency, or whatever the case may be. But we'll talk about that and say, well, let's talk about this a little bit and try to get them put a more objective way. And I do have business owners that, you know, for the most part, they don't really call me up for anything, but it is a true emergency, and we talk about it and see if it's the best use of their money. But in the final analysis, it's up to the individual whether they want to take their money out or not, or take a portion out or not. But I do try to put a more objective view on things for them to help them make a more sound decision.
Yeah, and I think that's important, you know, because when you're in the moment, regardless of what the moment is, you need to have somebody to say, okay, is this real? Does this look real to you? And then, so my other question is too, is that when it goes along, you know, should I invest? But the other thing is, especially for small business owners, entrepreneurs, well, I'm going to give you a good for instance. What if you're somebody who, like me, you worked for a company for several years, you know, you have a 401k plan, or maybe you've retired, and so you have your, you know, whatever, and then you decide to be an entrepreneur. How do you help shift somebody? Because, you know, there's lots of entrepreneurs that I speak to, and they had the full-time job. They did it. They had all the benefits. And it just wasn't their calling, and now they've switched over. What is there plans? Is there a way to help them navigate from, okay, I've got a sound 401k, I have all of that saved, but now I'm going to, is it that retail account, or is it something else that you do with them, you know, in a general way to to make sure they don't lose everything in their efforts, but still can support themselves until they get going?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Again, this comes down to, diversification and risk tolerance. And, you know, if you've done well in your retirement accounts and your retail accounts and you have enough money to live on, you know, do you really want to take the risk of ruining that, or how much money can you use to do an entrepreneurial thing that if you fail, totally fail with that, will hurt your retirement? So my main emphasis there would be to make sure, let's not do any harm your financial situation, but if you have access and that's what you really want to do, then maybe that is something you can do. But understand that you're really, you know, entrepreneurial businesses, as most of your listeners understand, is one of the most risky things you can possibly do, and most of them do not succeed. Of course, some succeed phenomenally well, but if you're in a situation where you have your retirement life settled financially, you know, you need to measure how much risk you're willing to take and what's a reasonable amount of risk to do.
To do that, and then what other options are without touching your retirement money. You know, because there are sometimes other options that maybe not touch that pot of money. So that's good to know, too. So, for me, the other, I think, question is, you know, can entrepreneurs or small business owners have a financial plan and make a commitment to it, because maybe they're, maybe they have three good months and then they don't have such a good, whatever that is. So can they still have a financial plan and make a commitment to that? And it goes back to that question, is even if you're an entrepreneur and you have three good months and one bad month, do you pay yourself or do you pay, how does that work?
Well, see, that's where I'd look at doing, if they're in that situation, I'd look at probably doing a retail account rather than, putting all into retirement. Maybe put some in the retirement account, but put a lot in the retail account. So if you need a cushion month where you're just sort of, you're averaging, $5,000 a month and suddenly you're down to $2,000 a month, you need extra money to get it out of the retail account. So, but again, that's a measure of risk and how well your business is doing. But if you put it in a retirement account, you can still get it out, but you'll pay penalties and things like that. So that's a discussion we need to have to make sure that they are putting enough away in the retail side rather than the retirement side if their business revenues are volatile like that.
And so when we're talking about financial plans in general, what can that do for somebody, for the entrepreneur? Is it just about the accounts? Is it about budgeting? What are the aspects of a financial plan for
somebody?
Well,
it's about net worth. It's about debt. It's about assets. It's about earnings. And it's about foremost and of all is about retirement planning and to plan your retirement. It's not a static thing either. It's a dynamic thing in that, we're constantly updating it. So say your business starts out really well and starts doing less well, then we might need to readjust the numbers in the plan, see what the effect that has, or if it's doing better than we thought, might be able to put less, less in one place and more in another. So it's a dynamic thing, but basically the map or the plan you have moving forward to reach your financial goals. And in most cases, that means retirement, or it might be more than retirement. It might mean things like I want to be able to send my grandkids, pay for my grandkids' college. I want to be able to take the family on a cruise once a year. It's going to cost $30,000. So it's all the wants, needs, and wishes is what we call them. So, and they all have, wants. The needs are primary, and then the wants are secondary, and the wishes are tertiary. So we look at all those aspects of it, and we can adjust it as we move forward.
And so along with that, and I like that it's one of the needs and wishes, we talked about that a little bit, do they call you with this emergency, but what are, give me two or three top reasons or five reasons why to call you as a financial planner. I mean, not you, but as a financial planner. Is it because, or during the years, even if you have a financial plan, what are those hiccups that they should be calling you and discussing before they make that decision?
Well, I mean, if you're going to make any major financial decision, you should consult with your financial advisor. I mean, but I think everyone should have a financial plan, either written, a formal one or a verbal one, and some direction in which you're going. And that way, as you progress through life, you need to have someone you can talk to about that, make sure you're on track. Because, you know, I've had new clients come to me and then they're early 70s, you know, not have much assets there, and they want to retire, and you know, it's kind of difficult. There's not much there to work with, so it's better to start, the earlier you start, the better, and so that when you get near retirement, then you have options. And some people say, well, I'll never tell them to retire, I'm just going to work until, you know, forever. I wouldn't know what to do with myself. I say, well, you never know when you become disabled, laid off, or if you're married and have a family, or you die, and you need to be prepared for all contingencies. And the only way to do that is to plan and to actively participate in investing and to do something for yourself. And a lot of people say, well, Social Security won't be there when I retire. I highly doubt that. I think it'll be there. It's sort of like the third rail in politics that I think will be there. But there will be adjustments to it, probably making for later retirements and maybe for limits on people who have too much assets and things like that. So you got to really be responsible for your own retirement. And so you can't do that if you just wait until the last minute. So you need to be actively involved in that.
And so for all my callers, especially the small business ones, maybe they've just taken on a new employee, or they want to, how important is a retirement plan for you, your employees? You know, because there's a lot of talk in the news that you can attract better employees with a retirement plan. So is that true? I wouldn't, you know, I've been an entrepreneur for so long, but if I did, that would be a calling for me. But do you find that in the younger generation that is attracting better people? And you know, is it hard for a small business to get a retirement plan? You know, is it like going through insurance where you get, or applying it? You know what I mean? Like maybe, because
yeah.
I think some people are afraid, you know, they don't know what that would mean for their business.
Yeah, I think it absolutely is essential for businesses to have retirement plans to attract and retain employees. I mean, if you think about, say, you're a 30-year-old person, you're working for a company, and you're making pretty good money, but they don't have a retirement plan, and you get an offer from another company of the same thing, that maybe the pay will be the same, but they say, but we have a 401k, we're going to match it for, you know, the first $3,000, we're going to match it. So it's extremely important, and plus I think it's a responsible thing to do if you have a successful business, that you offer something like that to your employees, because they, you know, they have retirement goals as well, and they're just not going to stick around if they can find employment somewhere else that doesn't have those, that does have the retirement plans. And there's many different types of retirement plans, and some are very easy to set up, simple steps, 401ks, and there's some others, but those are the main three that we use. But they are the simple being the simplest to set up. 401ks are more complicated, a little bit more expensive, but it depends on the size of the business and what the goals are, you know, what type of money you have for your employees and yourself. We can even do retirement plans for individual business owners, or that also includes if you have a spouse where there's plans we can use just for them, and you put away very large sums of money as well. And there's ways we can do it with the plans with more employees as well. There's different types of structures we can put together where the owners or the key employees can put away more even than employees can. But there's all kinds of options there, lots of them.
So and so this leads me, because we are almost to the end of the year, this leads me to this question. Is it better to start this year, wait in January? Does it matter for a 401k, like, or for retirement plans? Is there a better time to start? Is it too late for this year is really what I'm asking, and do you start in January?
Yes and no. It's like there are certain plans that require certain dates has to be started by. Like, for instance, the 401ks have to be, some of it is related to your business year, and some has to do with the calendar year, and some can be started now, and some can be started for this year, even after the beginning of January 1st. But, yeah, you just need to talk to your financial advisor and find out what those options are. But, yeah, there are some rules around when you can start it. But the general rule is you should try to start as soon as you can.
Yes, and at least be in the conversation with, so that you're not sitting here next year having the same conversation saying I should talk to somebody. So, and that's, I think that is the biggest thing that we can take from this show today is that it's important to talk to somebody because they're going to have the knowledge of when things start and if things change during the year or what it means for 2016 versus 2015, you know, whether that's how much you can put away or whatever, or how many employees that, you know, and just not for the exact ones, but is there, like, if you have employees versus not having employees, is there different, I'm sure there's different policies for, or 401k types, whether or not you have one or it's just you or, you know, that work better for different companies.
Yes, there is. And yeah. You know, in general, we'd say that it's current, again, it's current how much money you want to put away, and whether you have employees or not, those go in the decisions to making that. Like Simple can only be up to 99 employees, but that's one of my preferred retirement plans for small businesses. But a 401k can go from anywhere from one to, you know, a million employees, basically. But, and then the steps, there's some advantages to those, particularly for individuals or individuals and their spouses that I would prefer in some cases. But it all depends, basically.
And you know, the biggest thing, too, is that especially if you have major transitions in your life, whether it's an entrepreneur, and this really, I guess, could go for anybody, is that you should talk to a financial advisor, like whether, you know, getting married or opening a business or changing a job from one to another, because I know a lot of people leave behind money and they don't realize they do when they change jobs.
Right.
So any of those things would put into motion why you would need.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, even if it has to do with you get divorced or you get married or you adopt kids, all that stuff's important to talk to your financial advisor about, because it all can have an effect on things. Social Security, which is ever changing, they're changing some major rules this year on how, you know, it's a very complex thing to decide when you start taking it and what the benefits and downsides to different ages are. When they're changing it again over the next 6 months, that's going to change drastically. So all those things you should talk to your financial advisor about.
And really important that they don't need to keep up with this. That's what financial advisors are for. You know, like
right.
In my world of social media, it's my job to know what's kind of coming out there so that they don't have to know about that. And that same thing goes with money, is that, and shutting off that TV and calling somebody who really knows so that they can walk you through the pros and cons of everything.
Yeah, just like what you do. You do this every day of your life, and you probably do it more than you should. You're probably thinking about this and working on Saturdays and Sundays. The same with financial advisors. This is what we do. I mean, we do it every day, all day long, you know, and that's what we think about most of our waking hours. So, and that goes with any professional. It's, you know, my opinion, professionals are the way of going about every aspect of your life rather than trying to do it yourself. But that's just me.
It's good you say that because, you know, because everybody's like, well, the stock market's closed now. I can't do anything. And that's not really, you know, but that's that time where you should be planning. You should be, you know, but, and I think that that's good. When you're passionate about something, that's what ends up happening, though, is that you kind of live through
it. Yes, exactly right. Yes.
Eat it, you know. So I think that's a key thing to note. So we have about 6 minutes left. So I'm going to give you my question that I do try to ask most of my guests. And so I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot, because if I don't, then it wouldn't be any fun to ask this question. If you could describe in one word your career as a financial advisor, what would it be?
In how many words?
In one.
One word? I guess passion.
No, that's a good one. We like that word here. You know, I want you to explain that a little bit, but I think that that's so key, because if you don't have that, it doesn't, you know, really doesn't make a difference of whether you wake up or not to do your job. But that's that key thing that helps you do that if you're passionate about something. So, but you can put your own explanation, but that just...
Well, I mean, the reason I say passion is because I'm very passionate about understanding the markets, understanding what's working well, what's not, and more importantly, I'm passionate about helping people with their financial futures. I mean, it's core to everybody's, you know, lives is their financial, your current financial position, their future financial position, And I get really excited when I get a family or a person or a business on a path to where they have pretty much financial success leading to the future where they will be to retire and not outlive their money. I mean, that's what I get passionate about because I love helping people with this.
And that's exciting, though, to love what you do. And so I am really grateful you came on the show, and I think you've had a lot of great information to those of us who are passionate about, like I said, what we do, but that's not, like, for me, finance is not my thing. And so I need people like you in my life to keep me straight on that stuff. So so I think it's really, really key. And in just a moment, we're going to play how you can get in touch with Kevin and talk to him. And I just want to tell everybody that when you call him, you can ask him if you qualify for a complimentary financial plan, which would be fabulous. Just so people know, what states are you currently, can you currently do financial planning for?
Well, I mean, I'm licensed, I think, in about 10 or 12 states right now, but I can get a license in other states within a few days. So, there's a reciprocal agreement on that, but I can do about anything. But probably currently right now, I have about a dozen states I'm licensed in.
Okay, so New Jersey, my New Jersey listeners, because I know you're out there, call Kevin. He's awesome. So, I'm going to end the show, but I want to thank you so much, Kevin, for coming on. I think you were a world of advice and thoughts, and I really do like some of your thoughts, things, especially on the fact that, you know, about pulling out of your money too early to spend more later. It's a phenomenal concept that I think that most people really need to get so that they don't do that panic by advising and that panic type of thing. So I just want to thank you so much for being on the show today, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Wendy. It's been a pleasure.
Welcome to Love, Light, and Passion, where award-winning social media professional Wendy Manganiello. Kevin Duffy has acquired investment management consultant, CFP, and the CRPC designation. He helps select families and businesses reach their financial goals and ensure their retirement income. He serves business owners, professionals, retirees, and pre-retirees. He has a unique step-by-step process that allows him to determine which services and solutions will help his clients meet all their financial goals. Kevin views every client relationship as unique and develops individual solutions to address individual goals. He carefully listens to what every client has to say so he can develop a customized financial strategy to meet their financial needs. Kevin can be reached at 502-569-4120 or on his website www.duffywealth.com.
I just want to tell everyone to tune in again next week. We will have Stephen Eric Connor on the show. I'm so excited to have him on the show. He was a personal friend and partner to Sean, who our show is dedicated to, next week. And he is going to just talk about how he's got a phenomenal tool that he has developed as far as knowing who you are and your entrepreneurial spirit and really being able to delve into who you are and what you are. And I'm so looking forward to having him on the show. It's been a year trying to get him on, so this is great. So in the meantime, have a fantastic week. Work on your passion. Love your passion. And I'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Love, Light, and Passion with Wendy Manganiello. Visit her at www.socialabundancemarketing.com.